tangled webs, tangled indeed. James B. Stewart, not to be confused with Jimmy Stewart, James B. Stewart.
Well, you do bear a little resemblance.
Yes, you do. You're tall and handsome.
I think we're all related.
Yes, indeed. All of you Scotsmen. The stories that you tell in Tangled Webs, back to my greed, you can't say greed without arrogance in these stories. And the arrogance is just astounding.
The arrogance, and I guess it goes hand in hand with self-absorption. One reason I called it Tangled Webs was to show it's not just about the central characters, they're very important, but all the people that are drawn into the vortex by their lives, and then that's what becomes so complex. And to me, the impact of this is so vast. But the hubris, the self-absorption, we were talking about Martha Stewart. Some people have said, oh, well, she's back to being a celebrity. Maybe she went to jail for a few months. She paid a fine, but she's fine. Well, you could argue about that, but nevertheless, the people who were swept into the story around her are not fine. And I think one of the most poignant examples was the young assistant to her stockbroker named Douglas Faneuil. And he was swept into the story, and he initially lied to protect them, and then to his credit, he ended up telling the truth.
And that is a rare moment
in
this book.
It's very rare in this book. He had the courage, he had the integrity, he knew he couldn't live with himself if he held his hand and lied under oath. But he suffered tremendously for it. His career, he'll never work on Wall Street again. Does Martha Stewart care that his life was destroyed? No. She even claimed testimony she couldn't remember his name. She didn't, she denied ever having talked to him when actually he placed the stock order. He was just collateral damage to be swept out of his path. Or take Barry Bonds, who was convicted just recently of obstruction of justice and who clearly lied under oath. His trainer went to jail for him. He first lied about
him.
Then he refused to talk. And for Barry Bonds, he went to jail. And I'm thinking he was obviously, I think, in a misguided way, showing loyalty to Barry Bonds. But should loyalty be a two-way street with these people? With these kinds of characters, the loyalty only goes one way. It's from others to them. There's never any reciprocal loyalty. I mean, why would Barry Bonds let his trainer go to jail? Why didn't he come forward? And friend. Why didn't he come forward and say, look, Greg, go in and tell the truth. I believe I'm innocent. I believe the facts will vindicate me. But you go in and give the testimony. You tell the truth. Don't go to jail. Go in there and testify. Did he ever say anything like that? No. And in his grand jury testimony, he gives some, I think, very revealing testimony where he said, if I'm in a position to use other people, well, I'm going to use them.
And then he did.
And there's no compunction about this. In the political arena, you see it with Scooter Libby. The loyalty all runs to the top, to Vice President Cheney. He didn't tell his assistant to go tell the truth and let the chips fall where they will.
He being Cheney.
Yes. And then in the Madoff case, there's a poignant example where he still says that no one else knew about this scheme, which is just one of his continuing lies. But he brought in this young fellow, Frank DiPasquale, who was a college dropout and a teenager when he went to work for Madoff. And he started showering him with money and perks. And gradually, slowly but surely, he drew him into the Ponzi scheme. And he became the big executor. He kept all the records. He worked the computer. Madoff couldn't even use a computer. He did all of this. And he pleaded guilty. He'll be sentenced. But, he was an impressionable teenager when he came to Madoff. Does Madoff care that he ended up ruining his life and his family's lives? No. None of these people show any remorse for what they did.
We talked
recently. That's called being a sociopath, isn't it?
Well, it's a quality of a sociopath. I'm not a psychologist, so I don't feel qualified to say what these people
are. I can say
But certainly the having no kind of inner moral compass of right or wrong is a quality of a sociopath. Being able to lie effectively is a hallmark of a sociopath. And I think what we see in society is that whether they're clinically diagnosed as a sociopath or not, many people, and many successful people, display some sociopathic qualities, including a willingness.
That's considered a sickness.
Well, and it should be.
Except when it's considered a sign of success. Unfortunately, we have created an environment in which those two are very easily confused.
We used to do a lot of consulting with big companies, and invariably, the higher up you got, the closer one got to what is known as the reptilian brain. That being way back here, that being that which keeps you breathing without having to think about every breath, but it means that the emotional system is gone, thereby empathy is gone, and the cognitive system is gone, which means you don't think, you're just absolutely out for yourself.
Right.
That seems to be what you're talking about.
What you get is the ability, you know, the very, very constrained ability to rationalize.
Yeah.
Piled on top of the reptilian brain. I mean, this is, you know, it's basically metaphorical, but it's an interesting,
it's a real bad rap for the reptiles.
The way to look at it is you know, and it shows up in this. These people rationalize the most absurd things, and apparently, at least in some cases, they're successfully rationalizing it to themselves. Mm-hmm. I think some of them, clearly some of them, at least at time, did not know they were lying.
Well,
No telling. I
agree that seems hard to believe,
it's hard to believe.
So consistent, and it is consistent with their personality.
And it's not a defense.
Oh, no.
It's certainly not a defense. I also think it's troubling in that a number of these cases, it wasn't enough to just lie and then lie. To lie and then to lie about lying and to cover it up. Some of these people went so far as to point the finger at others and falsely accuse other people of doing things that they knew were not the case.
Scooter Libby comes to mind.
Martha Stewart is claiming, you know, that she was persecuted for being a successful woman. But there's a lawyer in the Barry Bonds case. And this, to me, is a particularly compelling story because lawyers have to be the first line of defense against perjury. They are officers of the court.
Right.
They take this oath. They're not supposed to let people give false testimony. So he leaked these grand jury transcripts. There was an investigation into that was a violating the law in and of itself. And he signed a written affidavit saying, I did not leak the transcripts. He lied under oath, denying that he was the source for that. Then he turned around and he pointed the finger at others, saying, oh, I think they leaked. First, he says the prosecutors leaked. Then, when that didn't work, he said, oh, one of his own clients was probably the source. So he's frantically trying to deflect blame by accusing others of what he very well knew that he had done.
You know,
and
you
then, he's a lawyer.
And then, when he finally fessed up, he blamed alcohol and cocaine.
Right.
Yes. And, you know, it's curious that when I interviewed this person who worked very closely with him and had actually, in the end, blew the whistle on him, he said that to his knowledge, he never really did violate cocaine or alcohol, no more than, you know, anyone else in the general population. So, that's just, I guess that's now the standard fallback. You check into the Betty Ford Clinic, or you blame it on drugs and alcohol, and then supposedly, oh, then everything is all right.
I want to go back to something you said earlier. You're talking about that role of a mentor. We did a program a week ago with Bill Holstein, who's written about the next American economy. It's an interesting subject.
He's a financial reporter.
He addresses it. You probably know him. And one of the things he points towards is the importance of mentoring in the process of developing a workforce that is appropriate to the work to be done. And it got me thinking, everybody talks about mentors, assuming that it is a uniformly good thing. And what you point to, it concerns me because not everybody's a nice guy. Not every mentor is mentoring in a way that is, let us say, legal, honorable, ethical, reflects high moral or ethical standards.
Does Bernie Madoff come to mind?
Well, that's why I mentioned that, because this mentoring piece is very dangerous. And actually, you can see it all across what you've written about.
Well, I think that's a good point. And one of the reasons that these stories, I think, are so significant and serious is that all of these characters are role models, and that we're social beings. We look at the behavior of others to shape our own conduct. We start by looking at our parents. We look at our teachers. In the workplace, we look to those we're working with, our superiors, our mentors in many cases, for clues to how do you behave to make your way through life. And when you suddenly have lying at this high level, at this scale, and then when you see these role models pressure the people under them, not just by setting a bad example, but by actually pressuring them to get on the team and perpetuate the lie, you see other people being pushed into it, in some cases at their own peril.
Soldier on the battlefield is the one that gets my attention, coming from Dick Cheney, which I found appalling, I mean, just vile,
Well, and saying it to Bush that he should pardon the guy because he's a soldier on the battlefield.
I also found it to be damning evidence that he had made promises that Bush undercut.
Well, you know, one of the mysteries in this story, which was involved the outing of the identity of a covert CIA agent, was who ordered this harebrained, you know, PR scheme in the first place.
This conspiracy of dunces.
And Scooter Libby, we know now, was one of the people vigorously trying to get the press to expose her identity. He never admitted that, even though he's chief of staff to the vice president, he never admitted that the vice president was the source of that. However, here's the evidence. I mean, there were handwritten notes in Scooter Libby's handwriting in which the vice president dictated to him the information that Valerie Plame was a covert agent. A very short time after that meeting, Libby is out meeting with Judith Miller, a New York Times reporter, vigorously trying to get her to write a story. That's incident one. Incident two, he and Dick Cheney are alone in a cabin of Air Force Two together. They both testify that it's possible that Cheney told him to leak her identity in this flight, but he doesn't. Neither one could remember. Libby gets off the plane. He goes right into the terminal at Andrews Air Force Base, and in the terminal, he gets on the phone and starts speed dialing reporters, trying to get them to expose the identity of Valerie Plame. Now, can't we all put two and two together there? That sequence of events. I do not believe Scooter Libby was freelancing this breach of national security. It's so obvious that Cheney told him to do that. And then, of course, Cheney's claiming he was a soldier on the battlefield, I think, reinforces that. But what is so pernicious about that, to me, is that it elevates loyalty over the obligation to obey the law. And if loyalty is a supreme virtue, then those who have the power, the strongest, in a position to command loyalty, will rule. We will revert to the law of the jungle. It's no wonder that this is the code of organized crime.
You call it
crime.
Tribalism.
It is. Exactly.
And organized crime. You said organized crime.
Right? I didn't hear you say that.
Well, that's the law of organized crime. That's, you know, when Greg Anderson, Barry Bonds' trainer, got out of jail on the many occasions he was in there for contempt of court, for refusing to testify, all the inmates gathered around and gave him a standing ovation. Now, that to me pretty much says it all. This is the law of the prison yard, that loyalty trumps every citizen's obligation to tell the truth when sworn to do so.
There is another level to this that makes it all the more egregious, if that's possible. Then you get George W. Bush condoning this behavior, the person who is at the pinnacle of the government that is representing me, my government, we the people being sovereign. You get Bush, who won't pardon him, but he condones it, literally condones this behavior by saying, oh, well, but he doesn't have to go to jail. What does that tell the world?
I was appalled by this. I mean, a democracy cannot function if we do not have truth at the highest levels of our government, number one. And secondly, the president's the highest law enforcement officer. He must obey the law. And if not, then where are we? But what happened?
And the answer is, where are we? We are.
We're in serious trouble. But, you know, Cheney wanted him to pardon Libby for obvious reasons. And so Bush actually convened a group of lawyers to review all the evidence to see if there was in any way he might have not gotten a fair trial, was wrongly convicted. And the committee concluded that no, he was not wrongly convicted. There was a massive amount of evidence. So Bush said, no, I'm not going to pardon him. But then, as you point out, he commuted the sentence. Now, what is the difference? The prosecutor was apoplectic, was very upset about this. Because exactly as you say, he essentially condoned perjury by saying he did not have to serve his sentence. No wonder, there's a U.S. senator in my book, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, quoted as saying, the eve of Libby's indictment, she said on national television, well, I hope they indict him on a real crime and not some technicality like perjury. And, you know, that is horrifying to me because perjury is a crime. It is a felony. It has been a crime since this country was founded. It was a crime in medieval England. It was a crime in ancient Rome because the obligation to tell the truth in a court is one of the planks of civilization.
We're going to be right back with James Stewart, and there's so much more to talk about. Please join us when we
come
back.
None of which we care about, right?
No, none of which we care about. Tangled webs, how false statements, why not lies? Why false statements are undermining America, from Martha Stewart to Bernie Madoff to you, and we will hope that you'll be with us when we come back.